This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
شما در این قرن معجزه کردید. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam and hello and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our program, The Man Who Changed the World. This program is dedicated to the memory of Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. And it's a program also about him, about his great personality, and of course about his historical character. I'm your host for this program, Ijaz Hussain, and once again, I'm joined by my good friend, Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, who is also an Islamic researcher and scholar, and I want to welcome him to the program, first of all, and say salam to him.
Alaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you once again for accepting our invitation.
My pleasure.
Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, we got to the point, I think, from the last program, where you mentioned a very, very important quality of the Imam, which was the fact that, you know, he was the friend and lover of the common people. And you talked about the fact that how the elites today, even in the 21st century, and we see that, you know, even with the what's happening in the United States and what happens throughout the region here, that how the elites hate the people, right? We're talking about we're talking about two entirely different things here.
Right.
And when you spoke about that in the last program, believe me, my mind went right back to the speech that was given by Emperor Heraclius when Abu Sufyan visited him, or he was called by him. I think that's the way the story goes, that the emperor actually called Abu Sufyan to his court. And because he had heard that there was a prophet in Arabia, which astounded Christendom at that time, they wanted to know more. And, you know, who did they, you know, speak to about this issue? The greatest enemy of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. But anyway, the emperor was very astute. He was very clever in terms of how he paraphrased his questions to him. And he said to him, he says, what is the quality of this man, this Prophet Muhammad? And he says, what kind of people follow him? Who follows him in Arabia? And he says, the poor and the slaves. And that's where you took me when you mentioned that exact point, that this is one of the qualities of the awliya. This is one of the qualities of the holy prophets, that they carry the common man. And this is very, very important, because we spoke in contrast about the fact that how the elites don't trust the people and hate the people. And this is why they're becoming police states, aren't they? I mean, this is why the U.S. is going to use drones now on their own population. So this is the sort of thing. But to carry on with our discussion, please take it to the next level, because we are really talking about, you know, we talked about the opinion of the expert opinion of Rahbar. We talked about the supreme leader. But I think you're now going to quote some other experts now on their view of this great personality.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I promised to quote two things from the supreme leader last program, only got to one of them.
Oh, did you? Right, okay.
So the one thing that I quoted was from a speech that was, you know, in the past.
That's right, yes.
Right. And he basically talked about how, you know, Imam was really somebody on the level of, you know, or close to the level of the prophets and the awliya in terms impact on the world.
Sure.
And the second thing I wanted to quote, again, from the supreme leader, talking about how Imam was and, you know, the beauty of just seeing that person and the way they lived and the example that they were, and the fact that he combined this deep piety and complete submission, as you were speaking about in the previous program, to God, being a complete, you know, servant of God, and at the same time leading humans and leading societies and confronting, you know, the most powerful of the oppressors and of the Zalimeen, as is
well. The famous quote that was given in most UK papers, they translated it from the Farsi, "Bot Shikan."
Bot Shikan.
Thank you very much for that. But the idol smasher. Exactly. Of our time. And you saw a picture
of
the Statue of Liberty and very communism being broken up and stuff like that.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that. I mean, I'm going to get to this
idea
of Bot Shikan later,
yeah,
because that's also a very important thing for many people. That was, you know. But the quote that the Supreme Leader, this is the one from the Supreme Leader talking about Imam, the one that he recently made, which is a combination of Imam being both a deeply pious and spiritual person in his personal life.
Sure.
And also, at the same time, being a leader of peoples, which is something that, in the Western view, in the modern view, is, you know, separate. You are either a monk in your, you know, separate in your desert, you know, retreat, or
sure,
you
are,
you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Imam completely broke that.
Sure,
he was just as he was spiritual. He was also a leader of humanity, which is what Islam tells us. This
right.
is what the Prophet did.
Sure.
This is what the Imam.
We are going to listen to that quote now.
Somebody like our magnanimous Imam, who single-handedly entered the arena, managed to unite all the people and launch this great movement with his firm determination, faith, and reliance on God, relied more than anything else on knowledge and understanding, on worship of God, and on the enthusiasm which originates from one's heart and soul. Until the end of his life, this great person used to wake up in the middle of the night and shed tears despite being old and physically weak. We knew it because we had heard from his close relatives, who knew everything about his lifestyle, that he used to wake up in the middle of the night and ask Allah, the Exalted, for help. He used to keep a vigil at night. He was like this at night, and during the day, he used to enter the arena like a roaring lion and defeat global powers and solve the people's problems. He used to strengthen and set in motion the determination of all the people, thanks to his reliance on spirituality.
Very, very powerful words there from the Supreme Leader about this great personality of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul. Dr. Mahdi Tarabi, I mean, what can we say after that? I mean, the thing is that he certainly, you know, put it in a nutshell, you know, that this is a man truly of God, and he enters the arena in order to guide mankind against the most powerful demonic forces that were there at the time.
Right, and I mean, this is the thing that we were talking about, which is that, you know, this was completely, had been lost in humanity.
It
the fact
been,
that
yeah.
you could be somebody who was deeply spiritual.
Deeply spiritual, yes.
And, you know, devoted in your personal life and in your worship, you know, on a daily basis in the middle of the night, you know, wherever it was that you had to be connected to God, and at the same time be somebody who is, you know, completely active and leads a nation towards its liberation and towards
independence,
its independence, its awakening. Mm. It's and, you know, these are things that, you know, over the years, when you look at how Western civilization developed, how,
sure.
you know, religion was put aside, how you had this idea of, you know,
that materialism was the way to go.
Right. And again, this has to do also with Christianity itself.
That's
the
true.
Fact that it failed in many, many ways.
Of course it is.
In order to really satisfy the needs of humanity. And this is why we say that Islam is the deen al-haq. Is the religion of truth.
Truth, yes.
Is the one that's the most updated version for humanity.
Exactly.
The one that actually, you know, is able to satisfy all the needs of humanity. This is why we're Muslim. Because
exactly.
we say Islam is a complete religion.
Mm.
And again, I want to emphasize these things. These things, we've talked about this before, but it's always good to remind
yeah,
ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of these
I mean, I think
you
it's
You know, there's no
it.
Point in mm. in having a God that doesn't care about people. There's no point in having a God that doesn't care about social justice. There's no point in having a God that doesn't care about the liberation and the liberty of human beings.
Sure.
There's no point in having a God that allies himself with the oppressors.
No.
Okay?
No.
So I'm saying these things in a strong way because we have this very...
And I thank you for it.
Mm. Odd image of like, you know...
Mm. But that was the image that was given, being
right.
given to
I
us,
I mean, the
it?
Idea that, you know, God, you know, he's the one that's... He's the main thing.
Mm.
You know, he's not going to forget about the people who are poor and deprived. And, you know, like you mentioned very nicely, the fact that you always had the prophets, you know, and of course at the best example of it being Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, being, you know, with the poor and the slaves. And we have the same thing with, you know, Prophet Ibrahim. We have the same thing with Prophet Musa.
Absolutely.
You know,
Moses,
with Prophet
yes.
Isa, peace
yes.
be upon them all.
Sure.
You know, you look at, and it's even in the Bible. It's in the Torah.
Yes,
you
it
know,
is.
These
of
are not things that, you know, but
mm.
also in our, you know, in the Quranic version of their stories,
mm.
you know, the people that follow them are not the elites initially.
No.
Because they are a threat to the, you know, money,
mm.
wealth,
mm.
and power and of these elites. The fact
well,
that these
I mean,
elites would
I,
be above the law.
If I could make a quote from the media, which I heard recently, and it's a quite a funny quote, facetious quote, but it's interesting. We believe in the prophets as the 124,000 that came into this world as Muslims, but the elites believe in these prophets, which is just...
You know, with F.
With F.
As opposed to PH.
PH, exactly.
Exactly. So this is the point, you
mm-hmm.
know. And like the Supreme Leader was mentioning, mm-hmm. here is a man, you know, even in old age, mm-hmm. even at a time when he was physically...
Yes, as the Supreme Leader was
you know,
saying,
when he was physically
very powerful,
you know, ill
description.
And, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting up in the middle of the night, beseeching...
Beseeching, yes, that's the word, yes.
You know,
yes.
beseeching at night and besieging the enemies at, in the...
Yes, besiege, because he did mention that.
And creating
because,
the besiege.
Yeah. And he created the besiege, yes. The volunteer
so,
defense
so,
force.
So, you know,
right.
these are the things that... this is why people followed him. This is
of
why.
They did.
This is why we always look at him and think of him as the most important person spiritually that we were able to, you know,
I think he,
have in our life.
I think this is a point to be mentioned here that that ishq that the Supreme Leader referred to in his description,
the love
of this love, and I think that's the essence of religion. That's what it's all about. It's
exactly.
about that love, and I think we had a taste of that while. You know,
exactly.
we were living those times. And it was that love
exactly.
that was the greatest motivator in terms of
exactly.
that liberation that we,
exactly.
we now
there was,
experience today.
There is no doubt in our minds, after having witnessed Imam and the things that happened
yeah.
with him and during his time, you know, because we're talking about Imam and his times, right? This is the program. There's no doubt in our minds
absolutely.
About the existence of God. There's no doubt in our mind about, you know, the truthfulness and the rightfulness of the Sunnah of the Prophet, peace be upon him,
yeah.
about the school of Ahlul Bayt, because we experienced it. This was not, it wasn't theoretical. It
no.
wasn't something that we were taught and to memorize only.
Yeah.
It was something that we experienced on a daily basis in our lives, and the things that happened and the challenges that we were able to overcome.
It was from the heart.
And, you know, it was practical. It was real. It was not, you know, something distant that, you know, you had to... you know, go through many different twists and turns and able to understand it. It was something we experienced on a daily basis.
Yeah.
We felt it, we saw it, we knew it.
Mm.
And this is the difference between Islamic spirituality and maybe others, which is that, and this is an important point.
Please.
You know, about, and I hope, you know, just to bear with me and the listeners that, you know, this might seem like a deeper academic point, but this is actually very important, which is in Islamic philosophy, in Islamic spirituality, Irfan, as the only school that has reached this level in terms of explaining it,
sure.
we claim, or the school of Ahlul Bayt claims in its Irfan, that there at some point there is a unity between the person who knows and the knowledge that he has. This is different mm-hmm. than in other schools of philosophy and in other schools of spirituality.
I see.
You know, you have that spiritual aspect in other religions, but it is not explained well. It is not understood well in an academic matter.
I see.
Spirituality is equated with emotionalism.
That's right.
Which is not true. You know, this is not the reality of it. When we talk about reaching the highest levels of spirituality, it is an actually where there is very little emotion. It's pure logic. It's pure having a 100% knowledge and understanding of something.
A kind of certitude.
It's a certitude, exactly. A very firm certitude where you, as the knower and the knowledge, are combined. This is when we talk about the knowledge of the prophets or the imams. This is the kind of knowledge that we're talking about.
Sure.
Okay, this is what makes them different from normal humans.
In Arabic, we call it yaqeen, isn't it?
It's yaqeen, and you know, in philosophy, they call it al-mahuduri, which is presence knowledge.
Yes, I've heard of this.
It's presence knowledge.
Presence knowledge.
As opposed to knowledge, which is the normal kind of knowledge that we have, which is you as the knower are separate from the knowledge.
Mm.
You have the knowledge, but it's separate. There's not a unity.
There's not a unity.
There's not.
But this is like a living knowledge. You're actually living it.
So what we felt and what we saw and what we experienced, as an example, I'm saying.
Yes.
When we say we, I mean those of us who lived that time.
That's right. Absolutely.
Those of us who saw it, those of us who experienced it, you know. These are things that there is such a level of certainty for us in this. It's beyond the things that we normally talk about and the normal levels of existence that you know we experience. Again, something acknowledged by, you know, non-Muslims, even enemies of Islam, even enemies of Imam.
Sure.
These are things that have to do with, you know, when you see it, there's no denying it.
Mm.
You know, there's many examples of, you know, Western statesmen, politicians, journalists, elites.
Yeah. Who have some kind of charisma.
Right. Who then saw what happened with Imam and acknowledged that this was different.
This was different, yes.
Than what they had experienced previously.
Previously, yes.
Okay. This has to do with what you mentioned, which is, you know, the idol smasher.
That's right.
Butchikan, you know. Mm. We always used to, there was this, I remember now that, you know, they used to have the chant when he would come in, which is, you know, you are our soul, you are, you know, the idol smasher.
Idol smasher.
And, you know, when, as you correctly point out, you know, those idols were the idols that related to things like, you know, having to become Western and or having to become Eastern, even for those who were Marxist or communist or wanted to join the Soviets.
Sure.
You know, sphere.
Yeah.
That's on one level. Yes. And of course, on a deeper level, it has to do with your own inside and your own spiritual, you know, the Jihad Akbar, you know, the greater jihad.
The greater jihad, yes.
Which, of course, is also, you know, one of his famous speeches that he held. Mm. And it's a book. It's been translated into English. It's very good. He's actually talking to the seminary students. He's talking about that, you know. You know, the main thing in life is to have that inner greater jihad of yourself, fighting against
the
yourself.
The nafs, the jihad nafs, yes.
The animal levels of your own existence.
Sure, sure.
It's also the first hadith that he quotes in his 40 hadith, in his famous...
That's right, yes.
He starts off with 40 hadith, with the hadith where, you know, some of the companions of the Prophet, peace be upon him, they returned from war, from battle, jihad askar, smaller jihad.
Smaller jihad.
And he says, you know, good for you that you went and good that you fought in the jihad askar, but now it's time to do jihad akbar. And they go, what is jihad akbar? Mm. And he says, I'm sorry, quoting, you know, you're the hadith.
No, expert. That's all right. No, please. No, this is your platform.
He says
today.
Jihad akbar is jihad nafs.
Jihad
is fighting, your inner
self.
Yes. So
your inner ego, yeah.
So, you know, this is the thing about Imam. I want to quote here, because I mentioned that even his enemies or those who have nothing to do with Islam.
Yes, you were going to...
and none other...
He's over 1,000 years
than
old,
our good friend and, you know, Henry Kissinger.
Yes, we always go back to
him. We always mention him. Yeah. And I'm paraphrasing again because it's a longer quote. I don't want to take up too much time. He talks about the fact that... and he calls him Ayatollah Khomeini.
Does he?
Very good. At least he knew that, you know.
Of course. Yes. I think he was one of the more smarter men.
Right.
Of course he is.
He says that Ayatollah Khomeini, in a serious way, created a crisis for the planners of the West.
Ah.
Because his decisions were so thunderous, were so shaking.
Earth-shaking.
Earth-shaking.
Yeah.
So based on, you know, based on things that they had no clue about, that he says, Henry Kissinger says, that we didn't know what to do.
Exactly.
We didn't know what to do.
Well, this is a very good... Because could I just come here briefly, just for a couple of seconds? Because there was a... this was from George Shultz, I remember. He was Secretary of State at the time in the Reagan administration. And they said this. This is a quote direct from him, where he said, we had weekly meetings or almost daily meetings about the situation in Iran.
Right.
And he says, everybody was called in, all the big experts and, you know, military people and, you know,
strategic people
who knew something about Iran, who right. really knew something about Iran. They all sat them together. Reagan then asks the question, you know, what about Ayatollah Khomeini? And he says the room was silent.
That's so funny.
He says nobody could come up with anything. And, you know, what you're quoting there is true because, you know, there were meetings in the White House where they just simply did not know what to do. And then eventually Reagan came up with the idea that why don't we send a cake and a couple of pistols to Rafsanjani, you know, the president of Rafsanjani at the time, you know. And this is the thing. And he sent a Bible. That's right. He sent a signed Bible because he did have some kind of religious background, Ronald Reagan. But he sent, with his autograph,
right.
a Bible, you know, a signed Bible. So, you know, this shows you that, you know, the only thing that was left to them was to respond in religion. They couldn't do anything from the political point of view.
So he talks about how these, you know, earth-shaking decisions.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
By the imam left them, you know,
completely
in disarray, not knowing what to do. He says nobody knew what to do with these decisions that were made, and that basically because, and this is again Henry Kissinger saying that this was because that Ayatollah Khomeini, as he says, was conducting his affairs, his confrontation with the West based on divine precepts. Okay?
Divine precepts. And teachings.
This was the thing that we didn't know what to do about because they had never confronted anybody like that. Okay? And so he said that not only was he confronting us based on these divine teachings and precepts, but he was completely sincere in his in his enmity.
And that was the real problem.
He was very sincere in his enmity. We couldn't buy him off.
We couldn't
scare him. We couldn't do any of that stuff. You know, this is Henry Kissinger, and I just want to mention two events which really prove this.
Please.
Because again, we're going back and talking about, you know, the Supreme Leader mentioned how at night he would, you know, seek the help and guidance and grace from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in the day, he would enter the arena like a roaring lion.
It's fantastic.
You know? Now, let's talk about some of these examples
roaring lion.
You know, and also related to what, you know, Henry Kissinger was talking about here, which is that you had at the beginning of the revolution, basically it was time to... the Shah had left, and there was the Bakhtiar government, which was you know appointed by the Shah.
By the Shah, that's right.
But the Shah had left, and this was going to be you know the new way of ruling Iran, which is you know the Shah is you know only nominal and
according to standard CIA procedure.
Right, exactly. Right. We have this kind of nationalist type leader who had his you know history of confronting the Shah, but still a constitutional monarchy, and Iran staying within the Western sphere. But instead of having the Shah and his prime ministers, having this kind of nationalist leader there.
Right.
And so Imam at that time is in Paris, and they say to him, well, you know, you got what you wanted. The Shah has left. You know, isn't this what you wanted? Why deal with politics? Go back and, you know, just be the spiritual person that you are and you're praying. And, you know, you can go to Qom. You can go sit there in Qom and, you know...
Right.
Make your pronouncements and your proclamations,
and
you can even you are even allowed to mention things, you know, in the newspapers and on TV if you feel something's going wrong somewhere. But let this, you know, westernized,
you
know, these guys that are, you know, nationalists, let them rule, you know, just be happy with what you've reached.
What was the response?
So not only that. This was
one aspect, right.
So this was the general thing that they told him.
Okay.
Which, of course, he said, we don't even accept this new government.
Yes, that's right.
This is an appointed government by a king who didn't have any legal basis himself.
So this
government has no legal basis. We're going to have our own government. Okay? So this is the situation. We're talking about somebody, the courage, you know, roaring lion.
Yes, roaring lion.
Roaring
yes,
lion. Okay?
Yes. So this is one of the things we loved about him.
Right. Yeah. So here's a man. He's gotten rid of the Shah. who's left, officially has left the country.
Yes.
He's in Paris. Everybody's, you know, saying, look, you know, you got what you wanted.
Mm.
You know, okay.
Shot off.
You know, it's finished.
It's finished.
And just let these guys do it. They know what they're doing. Yeah. You know, a country needs these elites to run them. We can't have, you know, mullahs running things. You guys don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are all Sorbonne and, you know, Oxford and Cambridge and Harvard educated.
Sure.
You know, let them just do what they have to do.
Sure.
And they're not monarchists, you know, mm-hmm. in that sense. You know, they don't. Imam said, no way. We're not having any of that. Then this is quoted, what I'm saying now, by one of the leaders of the religious national religious parties that at that time was working with Imam, which then later left the revolution.
right?
And he's quoting this. I'm not going to mention his name because, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yes, I'm fully aware.
But he was a high up member of the national religious movement in Iran at that time.
Sure.
What I'm saying, he quoted in the BBC. So this is not something that we've made up somewhere. We heard this is him saying this in the BBC.
Sure.
I heard it from him quoting it in a documentary in the BBC. He says that through me, because this person had lived in the States before and, you know, spoke English and, you know, had spent his exile time in the U.S. So the Americans felt that he's a person that they can talk to. And he had a connection with Imam. This man, he's saying that the Americans told me to tell Imam that Imam should accept the Bakhtiar government.
Ah.
Okay.
Right.
As the way that I explained it right
sure.
now. You can go live in Rome and do your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But accept this government.
Sure.
And if you don't, we will tell the military to make a coup d'etat and arrest all of you.
Ah.
You know, the usual American, you know, like what they did in Indonesia and Chile and whatever.
Yes, yes. And,
okay?
Yeah.
And if you don't accept it and if you cause trouble, we will tell the military to make a coup d'etat.
Yeah.
And we have the list of all the people that need to be arrested, you know, the 500, 1,000
yeah,
that need
sure.
to be, and we will execute all of you.
Okay.
So this is a threat.
Right, yes.
Thruffer.
Yes, right? The Thruffer game.
Yes,
we're back to that again.
Threat
yes.
and offer. You
threat
know?
And offer, yes.
So what does Imam say?
But yes.
Imam says to this man, says, yes. tell the Americans,
please.
If you do this, I will declare jihad. I will issue a fatwa of jihad.
MashaAllah.
And we will take over the whole country and we will destroy the army.
Excellent.
Okay. Roaring lion.
Roaring lion.
Right?
I mean, he was extremely
So
courageous.
This person
There's
that's
no
explaining
doubt about that.
This... on BBC, you can just tell he's like frustrated. Like, why would Imam do such a thing? Like, he's like, why would you do
well,
that?
Well, he believes in the Quran, my friend.
Right.
And he believes in God.
So this is the first example of roaring lion and the things that Henry Kissinger is talking about. The fact that
this is what
norm. If the Americans in history had this, what they did, this proffer, this threat offer, had, you know, if you look back at history 50 years,
of course,
it always worked.
Well, always worked.
And if it didn't, you know, they would have, okay, so... Yeah. The Americans are like, okay, fine. So you're going to go challenge us. We'll see what happens. Because remember that after the revolution, we had many coup attempts.
Of course.
By the army supported by the Americans.
Yes,
so,
of course. And
so,
you know, there were many martyrs as well, of course.
So the threat didn't work.
Mm.
Imam came to Iran.
Mm.
He made that famous speech where he said, I'm going to sock the, you know, I'm going to punch this government into the mouth when he talked about the Bakhtiar government.
That's right, yes.
And we will establish our own
government. With the help of the people. That's right.
So, roaring lion.
Roaring lion.
Right? America threatens him.
Hmm.
The military in Iran is threatening him. He stands up. He gets off the plane. He goes to the grave of the martyrs in Beisht Zahra, which is where all the martyrs
that's
are.
That's right, yes, yes.
And
that's
in front of the martyrs and the graves of the martyrs, that's he
right.
says to everybody, we will punch this government into the mouth.
Hmm.
And we will establish our own government.
I think that's a good point.
Part two of the story. And the next.
Yeah, it's a good point to stop. Because punching in the mouth is the right way to go with the kind of tyranny we face at the moment in this century as well. Because there's a lot to learn from Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. Thanks very much for listening today. It leaves me only to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dr. Mahdi Darabi, thanks very much for your contribution once again. Thank you for listening and goodbye.